Welcome to the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast. I am your host, Lockie Phillips, and I help deeply caring equestrians create emotionally balanced horses with science, empathy, and feel. This podcast is a safe place for anyone who desires a better future for horses and for the equestrian lifestyle. I hope that you will enjoy these solo and collaborative episodes where we enjoy a deep insight into our horses' worlds and ways in which we can make that better for them. If you love horses and are willing to do right by them, you're going to love this podcast. And I thank you for being here. Alexa Linton, in my opinion, needs no introduction, but she is my friend, my colleague, and been doing podcasts a lot longer than I have. She's been a huge inspiration to me personally. I've been lucky to collaborate with her on a clinic. I've even been there with her at some of her lowest moments and some of her highs as well. I'm really grateful for Alexa and her contribution to the equine service sector, and I'm so happy to present her here on the podcast in this conversation, which at times I almost forgot that we were recording. It just felt like chatting with a friend. Alexa, hello.
Hi.
This is a full circle moment for me because your podcast was the first podcast I've ever listened to in my life, and then you were one of the first, not the first, but one of the first podcastresses that invited me onto their podcast. So it's just like everyone's scratching each other's backs, and I'm so honored to know you. But for those of us who don't know who you are, I'm going to start with a big question. Who are you? What do you do? And how do you do it?
Oh, crud. Should have prepared for this one. That's good. A good question. Who am I? Constantly shifting. That is constantly shifting. I think that, yeah, I am a very dynamic human being who greatly centers learning, growth, horses, obviously, animals in general, and justice. And I'm becoming, in the process of becoming, more and more of an activist, I would say. I am still at the, I would hope, very tail ends of my recovery from a big health event almost 2 years ago. And yeah, that's a, you know, in large part who I am in this moment. And I live in the Cowichan Valley, so I live on the unceded territory of the Kowatsin people here on Vancouver Island, in the beautiful Cowichan Valley between several amazing mountains. And I'm grateful to be here on this land. I've lived here now 16 years, and it's just been an incredible opportunity to build community, both with horse people, but also beyond. And I have two mares, as you know, Diva and Raven. And, you know, it's cliche to be, I think now, to be like, they're my teachers. And yes, they are, absolutely. But I feel this sense of, which I know you'll resonate with, just this profound honor to be able to hang out with them every day and explore the nuance that is the horse-human connection. I just can't get enough. So, yeah, I was out there this morning. My girls don't live at home right now, and I yearn to have that I live vicariously through you at this moment, because it's like, oh, having my family separate is really weird. And I was out there this morning and it was like this beautiful, like the sun was coming through, which we don't get a lot here in the winter. And I did a little bit of fun stuff with Raven. I've just been finding, like, she has a really high play drive. So, and Diva is very 25 now. You know, she's very like, I'm retired, I don't do that. And so I find Raven's the happiest when we do something together every day that works her mind. And so, yeah, I just like was out there just in this place of going, wow, this is so cool. And just playing with the small stuff with her that's getting to be big stuff, you know. I love that post the other day that you said, like, oh, like, you know, it was around like, let your horsemanship be boring or whatever. And I really took that to heart last year at your clinic. And it was like, I just love how that builds and builds and builds. Like, it's just this like brick by brick by brick, it becomes something like so cool. And then you have these moments of like, wow, something just happened that was just like so cool. And so, yeah, so that's me. I work in various spaces. As you know, I am what's out here called the osteopathic manual practitioner for humans. And I love that work. And I do some of that with horses as well. I co-instruct with Elise Meeke in equine cranial therapy in a 3-level certification, and I run the Whole Horse Apprenticeship, and of course the Whole Horse Podcast, and many dreams for the future, some really cool stuff coming through right now that I'm pretty stoked about that you kind of, you know, have the inside scoop on. But that's, yeah, that feels really neat to be rolling forward on as well, and mainly around horse spaces and environment as a huge piece of the puzzle when it comes to our horses. So that's me in a nutshell here.
A pretty beautiful nutshell. How how long have you done the Whole Horse Podcast for?
We're in our 7th season, so...
7 seasons.
Yeah, so 116 episodes, I think, now.
Take me back in time, back to Alexa of 7 seasons ago. Is that 7 years ago?
Or yeah, that's 7
years ago. Take me back to the Alexa of 7 years ago, and you started thinking to yourself, I'm going to start a podcast. And I'm going to call this the Whole Horse Podcast. And to really be one of the first, even before Warwick Schiller really got his hands dirty in this world, one of the first who really tried to bridge the gap between horsemanship and this other stuff that's coming to the surface now, from esoteric practices to body work to thought leaders to game changers to paradigm shifters. You came from that world of riding and training and all of that, and you were really wanting to document in real time the transformation of this equestrian industry as it began at a grassroots level. So I see you as a maverick in that respect. I see you as a leader, and you are a leader in that capacity. But take me back 7 years ago to the Alexa of that time. Who were you then, and what got this all kicked off for you?
Gosh, that's a grand question. My memory, I will warn you, my memory is a bit shite.
Well, we take all the time we need to take to answer the questions, because I've got a handy little AI tool that can edit out any huge, long, obscure pauses after the fact. So you can really take all the time you need. This is a very, like, non-ableistic, very, like, friendly, chronic fatigue-friendly space.
Excellent. Sort of rewinding to that space. Let's see. So I was living on a farm with Diva at the time. I had been in some absolutely horrible relationships. In particular, a couple that were very abusive, and I had been involved in an organization that had blown up in my face with misogynistic, horrible things. And it was an organization that I was teaching. I was a teacher in, and it was like this, you know, I think I'd been going on up until that point as, like, kind of oblivious white girl trotting through the world, like, everything's good. And those moments started my journey into what is happening. Like, something else is happening that I have just not even been looking at all. And there is these injustices occurring in front of me that are, like, so audacious that I can't even fathom. And I really started to unpack at that point. You know, the teachers came, you know, I was ready to start to look at systemic issues. I was starting to look at, what is narcissism and what is racism and what is capitalism and what is patriarchy and what is, you know, all these things started to land finally in me. And then I couldn't help but start, you know, to go, huh, with horses. Huh, that is also happening with horses. My nervous system state as I'm being abused is just like what's happening for my horse. You know, those things start to occur, like, in my face. Like, I adopted a pony who was literally showing me in real time what was happening to me. And in a very obvious, like, you can't miss this way. And so I just, like, there was no turning away at that point. And I'd been involved in lots of different horsemanship. Like, I was that, you know, that meme that goes around that's like, oh no, what did mom learn now? You know, what clinic are we? Like, I was that meme, you know, and I'd found some really beautiful ways of being with horses. And I was still carrying just so much anger, the places within me that I would lash out, that I couldn't, you know, find my own peace. And so there was, like, these things. And all this while being an equine therapist, being an animal communicator, I'm getting the downloads, right? I'm getting these horses going, why am I being oppressed? Why am I being abused? Why this violence? What is happening? Why did my mom send me away to this horrible trainer and now I have this trauma? Like, you know, I've worked with hundreds of horses that have gone through these things and that I've, you know, been connected with, communicating with, and trying to find, like, okay, where is my place in all this? But also, like, where do I need to be so I can feel like I'm actually really showing up in the way that I want to be with all this information and with these things that are occurring in front of me? So Yeah, I guess that was like the soup that I was cooking in at that point. And
super chaotic. It sounds like it was really chaotic.
Insane. That time in my life, like I joke, but you know, now I'm like, that's not really a joke. I was like, my only routine in the day was like brushing my teeth in the morning. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of how my life was. It was like, I was traveling everywhere. I, you know, I was teaching all over the world, literally Australia, you know, Singapore, all over the, you know, all over the world. And I was away most weekends and I was out, you know, dancing and party, like, yeah, I was going concern. Right. But also there was this sense of, okay, what is up? Like, you know, where do we find that space where you can just settle and find quiet? And also it led me, I believe, to just this whole change. Like when you talk about, I'm trying to remember exactly what your post said, maybe you can share, but like, boring riding is something like that. And what was the other side of it? Like
bombastic, impassioned, spectacular riding versus quiet, minimal, boring work.
I was at that time, look at me, like in all the spaces of my life, right? So it was very intense. I can imagine like being an animal in my world was like a lot to be with. And that place, I mean, I'm glad that I went through that place. It's shown me so much. And then, yeah, this sense of, okay, this is not the thing. This is not the thing, you know, and it wasn't working for me in my personal life, and it wasn't working for me really in my horse life. I mean, it was on the outside, you know, like I was with Diva, we were doing really cool things, there was lots going on, and yet I'm seeing now like this depth of connection. It's different, right? It's different. So that's I think where things begun. And I had also I'd always had this dream of like being a radio announcer. Like I always wanted to be, you know, I listened to Tom Power on CBC and I'm like, I want to be like him. Like I literally will listen to his interviews and be like, how does he interview people? So that was like another thing for me. It's like, I just love that. And I love talking about horses. I mean, like, who doesn't love talking about horses? So to be able to, you know, message someone that I'm like, they seem so cool. Be able to talk with them was like, that's awesome, you know?
I'm hearing you say that in this incredibly chaotic, adrenalizing, dopamine-fueled time of your life where everything on the outside was about searching for these spectacular, obvious markers of success.
Oh, yeah.
That in this time, you were coming up against consistency in maybe one place only, and that was from the horse. The horse was consistent, saying to you, red flag, I have a problem with this. I have a problem with this. I have a problem with this. And then they're like, okay, you're not listening. Let me shake you. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with this. And then from there, it sparked this podcast, which has sparked a community around you as an extremely benevolent and trustworthy leader and a role model for a lot of people, frankly. And now you've got this apprenticeship that's been ongoing, and now you're taking the next steps in your career, which maybe you can share something later if you feel comfortable to share. Mm-hmm. But did the podcast give you a sense of clarity, consistency, congruency, structure back to your life so that the pathway forward became more clear for you?
I would definitely say that was a piece of it, because it's a routine, right? Like, in one way, it's like, okay, you know, to have a successful podcast, you need to actually like put podcasts out. So yes, Alexa, you need to sit down and do this thing that's hard. At the time, I was doing everything. So I was editing and I was doing all the things for the podcast. And so it sort of, not only that got me into the routine, but also this sense of every podcast. And, you know, I'm sure people who have been listening for a while have seen this. Like, I grew with every episode. It's like every guest that I talked to is like, oh, you know, some little piece of wisdom or something clicked for me around what was going on. And so the podcasts from the beginning are very, very different to what they are now for me and what I ask people. And so there's been this evolution over that time, both, you know, like I think of the Whole Horse podcast is it's a representation of me and my journey, right? Like the people that I bring on are very much like, I want to talk to that person about this. Like, you know, there's that little like part that's very much about me and what I'm curious about and what's interesting to me. So if you want to know about me, like, listen to what I have on the podcast, because it'll give you like a pretty good indication of like, you know, where I'm at in that space and what I feel is valuable to have a conversation about in this time, right? Yeah.
It's so helpful to hear me see this, because as much as we try to be empathic towards others and understand other people's perspective, to actually hear from you in your own words what this has been like is hugely illuminating for me. And I haven't known you as long as some of your colleagues and clients have known you. So I'm sure that this is going to be illuminating for them too. I'm also seeing that there's a potential correlation between the collapse, we'll call it the collapse event, that I was unfortunate enough to witness. You experience, you know, I wish I'd never see anyone in that situation, but the collapse event that I saw you go through when we ran our clinic together in Langley, I'm seeing, and tell me if I'm wrong about this, that event was the culmination of a decade or more of a cumulative burnout, a cumulative over-adrenalization or adrenal fatigue. Because when you described to me the life you had before the Whole Horse, Whole Horse podcast and then the collapse that I saw, I go, ah, that's now making sense. I think 1 + 1 = 2. Is that correct? Am I on the money there? Or?
Yeah, you know, I think when I look back over my life, my first 20 plus years were spent, I was, one of my main coping mechanisms was dissociation, right? So I was a high achiever. I said that in the podcast with us on the Whole Horse podcast, I'm a super high achiever. And I did everything. Like I can remember when I was, you know, 15, say I would have, I don't know, 6 soccer practices a week, 2 games, dance practice, horseback riding if I was lucky. And then any number of other commitments, sports council, you know, whatever, right? So that was high school for me. And then I went directly into university for 5 years where I pushed myself to the limit and also was very, you know, like involved in things again, you know. And then, yeah, going into my 20s where I went straight into equine therapy school from university. I didn't have any, you know, I had a summer and then I went into a 2-year program and then I went into
most people take a gap year. Most people.
I didn't even know it was a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I gotta get on a thing, you know, I gotta get on a career. And so and I can share that, being an entrepreneur, like, I know I don't need to convince you of this. Like, it's a thing. It's really, really hard.
It is and not for everyone.
It's not for everyone. And I made a decision that was very outside of the cultural norm in my family. Like, that was not a thing where there was any role models or even encouragement around that choice I was making at all.
Yep.
And so I doubted it for a really, really long time. I sort of had this battle going on between my, what I might call my higher self and my, you know, my very physical self that was like, you need to do something normal with your life. So, you know, there was just a lot there. I always just felt I had to prove like how good I was at it. Like, okay, I can be here if I prove that I'm the best at this. So as an equine therapist, it was like, I must be the best. Every client that I see must get better. And I will do anything to have that happen. And, you know, like there was that sense of that drive in me. I must, you know, make a bunch of money with this or whatever, right? Like all these things. So it became...
When drive becomes a disassociation tool.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was much better at that point, thank God, at grounding and doing the practices. But there was still a lot of times where, I mean, I try to think back to my childhood and I don't remember anything. Like, it's crazy. Like, I don't remember stuff at all. And it's you know, to me, it's not like, oh, you were super traumatized. It's like, I just wasn't there. It just wasn't there. And I'm a high, high sensitive human, like very high sensitive. Attempting to live in a, you know, shall we say capitalistic world.
Capitalistic hellscape, let's call it what it is. Hellscape.
I had to bury a lot of that sensitivity to be, I don't know what, sort of functional in that time. So yeah, I mean, my burnout started in high school, you know, that was when that pattern began. So yeah, we're talking what, like 30 years, like long time, right? So by the time that event happened with you, it's like my body was like, you know what?
Like, so many things, so many things. You said something earlier that like made me almost fall off my chair. You said something like, I've got to get on the thing. This like almost abstract drive in the core of your bones that says, get on the thing, get on the thing. Whether that thing is a horse, whether that thing is a competition, whether that thing is a podcast, a job, a study, a client, or whatever, you've got to get on the thing, get on the thing. And it's like using, a lot of people think disassociation is like eyes going crossed and spacing out and like doing nothing. Mm-mm. You can drive yourself so hard that your soul like exits your body as you drive. And it's fascinating to discover what happens when we break the illusion, stop the madness, and literally say, stop.
Yep.
Just stop. Just stop. I mean, that was my genesis story with emotional horsemanship was I was that voice once upon a time when I taught my first ever lesson. It's because I saw this egregious stuff, people just having that feeling of get on the thing, get on the thing. And I just walked in there and said, okay, everybody just stop. And to this day, all of my posts, all of my techniques do exactly that. Okay, everybody stop. Let's think about what we're doing here. Let's take it step by step. Let's make sure that what we're doing is what we want it to be at each step along the way and that we're bringing the horse with us in what we do. It's fascinating to find out what happens when you get there. And though I don't want to re-traumatize you too heavily on a really, really horrible part of your story, what is it like now on the other side of near-death experience, collapse, serious health concerns, the construction of a hugely successful business. And now that you're on the other side of that and you're finding this expansive sweetness built on a stop, what is that like? now? Because I'm not asking for me, because I know that there are people out there mm-hmm. who are wanting to know what it's like. Yeah. Is the grass greener on the other side?
Yes, the grass is greener and the grass is different. You know, it's funny you use that analogy because when I was not well, I took 4 months off, completely off. Never done it before in my life.
It was all about a delayed gap year.
That's wild. Yeah, for sure. And no to-do lists, nothing planned. It was mind-blowing for me. And one of the things that I did was I gardened. You know, like when I went to this place of what am I able and wanting to do? Because most of the time, I mean, to give you perspective, when I was really sick, I'd lost over 25 pounds. I'm a little person. Like, I'm already, like, on that edge of, like, you should be gaining weight. So losing 25 pounds for me was, like, a really big deal.
Catastrophic, and yeah.
I lost a ton of muscle. Like, I would go in the bathtub, and I almost couldn't look at my body because, you know, when you put your feet up at the end of the bath, I could just see tibia. Like there was no muscle around my tibia. It was just skin and then a bone. And it was, yeah, like this place of such a profound weakness in my body that some days my only walk, like I could literally walk around the kitchen a couple of times. You know, we have like a little hallway and then the kitchen. That's what I would do in a day. You know, I couldn't walk down the front two steps for, you know, at least a few days after I got out of the hospital. So, you know, I didn't go see my horses. It wasn't like there was just all these pieces that just couldn't happen for me. And so I found the things that lit me up in that moment. And, you know, it was May at that time. And so, like I can put the seeds in the garden, you know? And so that's what I would do. I'd go out, I would turn the soil and I would put a little fertilizer in and I would plant my seeds for my veggie garden. And I would watch the bees and the insects and I would hang out with my animals and that was my day, you know? And it was quite a huge shift for me. Like, and talk about like a change of pace from, you know, going concerned to, you know, no, like my body just said no several times over. And then it was this sense of what's real, right now. And when I look back, you know, there was many things there that were very pivotal for me. And anyone who's gone through a severe illness can probably relate. Number one, you really find out who your friends are. Mm-hmm. You really find out who your friends are. And I entered into a phase of my relationship with my partner, Patrick, that was just something I never experienced in my life. So our relationship is the most secure attachment relationship I've ever experienced.
I love Patrick. He's a lovely guy.
He's amazing. A
lovely guy.
And shout out to Patrick. And yes. The way he showed up for me
mm-hmm.
during that time.
And continues to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't be with the horses. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. None of that could happen. So he took all of that over for me. And it was this sense of deep, deep, deep relief and support that was something else. And it's like it created this reference point in me of what that means for me now in terms of my relationships as well. Like, what does it look like for someone to show up for you and for you to show up for someone, right? I'm so grateful for that piece because it, number one, took away this need to strive in a big way because it was like my need for love was a part of the striving.
Oh, okay. Hard right? stop right there.
Because
I think you've just dug down to the deep chord here. Why so many, I'm going to phrase it through equestrian culture, dot, 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 toxic equestrian culture, this hustle and grind and drive to strive, to achieve, to show, to be spectacular, to be all those things is potentially for some people, what I'm hearing you describe is potentially for some people, not all, describing their deep hole in their heart, in their soul, that is missing secure attachments, is missing a sense of peace and reliability in not only themselves, but in their immediate vicinity with the people that they're in. And you see so many equestrian environments are like this. How many of us have been in a horse riding lesson where we're screamed at? That's not secure attachment.
No.
So how can that person discover things like patience, progressive training, long forecasting, steady application of technique, acceptance of their mistakes, fostering of a gardening atmosphere. I mean, good horse training should have the feeling of gardening, plant a seed, till the soil, let it grow, see what happens, and things just sort of build. And then suddenly it's like, holy shit, have you seen my pumpkins? Oh my totally God, right? I got this, yeah, you know. But then also good horse training should have times of let the field lie fallow.
Yep.
Turn the soil. This seasonal attitude, which is actually why we have been so successful with horses for 10,000 years, because it was always seasonal, because we had no. And so you just touched on something that I think so many people will understand, and I certainly resonate with, is that on the other side of hustle, drive, the striving, which also includes a lack of fundamental listening, a lack of empathy, a lack of awareness and disassociation through hustle. On the other side of that, we have the bumbling bees in the garden.
Yep.
Vegetables, secure attachments, green grass, and patient, progressive, real growth.
Yeah.
Sustainable, real growth. Let's take a break. If you'd like to learn more about emotional horsemanship, don't know where to start, and also maybe you're on a budget, maybe it's tight for you, maybe you are saving up for big expenses, or you're making sure that you're prioritizing your budget to provide your horse the best things that you can, but you still want to educate yourself, you still want to explore with me some of the elements of emotional horsemanship which might apply to you. Well, I have the perfect accessibility option for you. The Emotional Horsemanship Video Library. I call it a video library because a lot of people don't know what a Patreon is, but Patreon is exactly that. It is a video library. It is a content creation platform similar to YouTube, which allows people through a small subscription fee to access the content of creators and professionals anywhere in the world at any time. Unlike many social media platforms, Patreon is a really safe place with really responsible managers that treats their creators really, really well. Unlike YouTube, where I would have to have the privilege of an enormous audience in order to be paid to create content and give you education at a low rate, Patreon enables me to teach you at a low rate from the beginning. I have well over 100 videos on the video library from a broad range of subjects, from hoof care, herd integration, life skills, even haltering basics, separation anxiety, training, riding, behind the scenes, you name it, it's there, and even other podcast interviews with my friend Alexa. So for the price of a coffee, you can see all the most important stuff on the video library, which is about half of it. For the cost of a coffee and a sandwich, you get to see everything. And for the cost of a lunch, you get to see everything before anybody else gets to see it. So I'm inviting you over to the Patreon, www.patreon, that's patreon.com/emotionalhorsemanship. That's patreon.com/emotionalhorsemanship. Or check out in the comments below. or in the show notes to be linked. Thank you for being here, and thank you for considering just continuing to support my work. Now, let's go back to our conversation.
Yeah. And the craziest part about this is it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was striving so hard for happiness previously in all these different ways and trying to find it. Oh, is it under this rock? Is it here? Is it here? Is it here? And then just this sense of, you know, well, sometimes like my life is a little, like I laugh. It's a little bit like Groundhog Day-ish now, you know, it's a little like, okay, like we wake up, the routines are similar. I prioritize sleep. I prioritize good nutrition, exercise. So I'm out in nature, moving. And yeah, every day looks like pretty similar. Like there's stuff, you know, there's like different visits with different good friends or, you know, maybe a dance out every now and again till a reasonable hour, but it's really different. And then there's this part of me that goes, how am I feeling about this? And it's like, yeah, like it's good. This is good.
It's the shit. It's the shit. I mean, I've had moments like that lately, especially since we've got like a good spell of good weather lately. Mm-hmm. Good enough that my neighbor came to take fertilizer today from our sodden farm. But I've worked really hard all day up to 50, 60 people a week I'm working with at the moment, which is a pretty high volume. Like imagine like a horse riding center where one instructor delivered lessons to 50 to 60 people a week. That's kind of the volume that I'm dealing with, but then I'm fully supported. I go outside. My horses are happy. I have a delightful, civilized, quiet training with them. And they're like, cool. Is that all? And I'm like, mm-hmm. They're like, all right. And they go back to their life. I'm like, good. See you later. And like, it's just divine, and it's quiet, and it's peaceful, and it's like, and they're building, you know.
Yeah,
and exactly. I so relate to what you're talking about, and I'm so happy for you that you're there in this space.
Yeah, it feels amazing. It really does, because if I relate back to that time, you know, even 7 years ago, that's a different human, you know. That's a different human. And I do believe, and I'm sure you sort of share this, it's like we die numerous times in a lifetime, especially if we're change makers, especially if we're people who value growth, then this is a natural process for us to, you know, shed the skin, find a new, you know, version of ourselves waiting there. And I think the health event for me was in large part that. I mean, there's other pieces to it, and obviously it was really scary, and it was the ultimate shakeup. I mean, you don't get big, well, maybe you do, but like it was really something for me to. I mean, it's wild that that was the thing that sat me back on my heels. I, you know, a really driven person, but it's like, okay, this is what it's going to take. And it did. And even now, my commitment to the slow, the steady is, yeah, it's not receding. Like, it's there. It's like, okay, this is my boundaries. This is what I'm doing in a week. This is how it looks. I say no. If that's even people where I know that they're dealing with a lot, and this is what I need in my space, and with my energy levels, it's been a huge shift for me, you know, to prioritize not just myself, but this sense of my well-being, so that I can share this work. You know, this new idea is from that space. You know, I built my other business sort of seeking out, you know, please come and work with me, you know, listen to me, do the things with me. It was an outward experience on a lot of levels. I want to build something that is like, here I am. If you want to come.
You've called your body home. You've called yourself home. Yes.
Yeah. That's the feeling that I'm working with it through the whole piece is like, am I there? And then just being aware when I go outside of that, okay, just come back. Come back to the center place. And it's lovely to build it from that because it's so organic. It's like the garden, right? It's like, ooh, what's gonna come up? What's gonna show itself? You know, I found someone to do the logo and it's just like the perfect match and just these like little boop, okay, there's that. Oh, that's cool. Oh, that gives me inspiration for this next piece. So the feeling, and I think that's what our horsemanship can be as well. I know that that's what our horsemanship can be as well. You know,
yes, it's thoroughly modern what you're describing. I try to keep my finger on the pulse of pop culture, not because I'm a pop culture fiend, but because often we will see displayed in obvious and clear ways in pop culture what's occurring at a deeper level and a deeper shift in that society at that time. It's the English literature major in me from way back, you know. So Ariana Grande released a new song called Yes And. And I love this song, not because I'm an Ariana Grande lover, but because the message in it is of our time. Mm-hmm. And she has this little spoken phrase in it where she says, what's mine is mine, my energy is yours, your energy is yours and mine is mine. Yep. She's just like, this is mine, that is yours. It's kind of the ultimate call out to anyone entitled, which if we're on social media and we have a penchant for describing controversial subjects, I'm not talking about anyone in particular, maybe myself, you get entitled people show up and they'll, you know, and to call it home, to bring it back in, to rein it back in. It's very, very modern. And you're also describing self-discipline. And the dancer in me celebrates whenever I hear someone like you or my friends talk about the way self-discipline saved their life, because self-discipline saved my life as a dancer. It saved my life as a horse person, that ability that no matter what happened the night before, you come back to the bar every day and you start at the beginning every day. Yeah. There's a beauty and a simplicity in returning every day back to the first step every day.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, the dancer in me sees the dancer in you.
Yeah, it's so cool to hear what's happening for you. So you've alluded to it a little bit, but you're starting to shed another skin and move into another service and business space, but from a very well protected feeling.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to share about it today, if you can share anything at all?
It's like a little seed now.
Would you like to plant a seed?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it's just, as you know, when the germination process is happening, it's like, what's it going to be? I think that's where I'm at with it right now. It's just this curiosity of, you know, what's this going to be for myself, my community, potentially beyond that. I, as an equine sport therapist, particularly, which is really weird because I've stepped away from that work by majority, which is really kind of an odd feeling for me. That was for a few reasons. Like one, I was so feeling very exhausted with traveling. So I just wanted to bring everything home. That's been my thing. It's like, oh, people come to my house? Fantastic. Like, let's do that. But when I was working as an equine sport therapist more regularly, it really came more and more to my attention that the environments that our horses were living with, and you probably, if you listen to the Whole Horse Podcast, you're probably getting that, like, this is the direction I'm going in right now. because of my interviews and what I'm talking to people about, and who I'm talking to. And so this environmental piece became just like, okay, like we need to talk about this, because what I felt, what and I continue to feel, is that as a body worker, there were so many things that I could not address in a horse that were environmentally influenced or induced.
Sustained.
And yeah, completely. Like, or I would go and I would shift it. It would shift maybe for a couple of days and then come back, because the environmental factors are the most important thing. And so this new business for me is around that. I want to create a hub that is full of resources, information, and educational experiences that help people to feel confident shifting their spaces in a good way for their horses, to create more horse-centered ways of being in terms of how we either build or renovate or shift horse spaces.
It's so, so needed.
Like, yeah.
I did a 3-month group, my first group coaching program last year called Homecoming. And in it, it was like, oh, I'm going to teach you intermediate groundwork from this lens, from emotional horsemanship. Everyone's like, oh, okay. And they signed up for it. And then very, very quickly, everyone was sort of like, oh, hold up, hold the phone. You're a trainer and you're telling us as a trainer, as a horsemanship instructor that we have signed up for, that you care about the environment the horses are living in. I was like, yeah, you, that wasn't like an obvious like given, like that's not industry standard. My colleagues over there, and they're not holding you up and saying, hang on, how is that horse living? I would have very, very naively, because I've come into this industry like an alien, thought that that should be industry standard. If you're a horsemanship instructor, well, the horse's environment comes first. And like I knew as a dancer, I was always taught that if your home environment wasn't there, if your relationship was with your family wasn't there, if you weren't eating right or sleeping right, don't expect to have a good class the next day, you know? And I take that very, very seriously. And so often I had to put aside my primary skill set as an instructor and a teacher and say, okay, I'll teach you groundwork in a minute, but let me do like a 30-minute hot seat on horse keeping. Is this what you guys need me to be doing? So it's very, very needed. There's a dirge, a lack of resources.
Very much so. And and I think, you know, it was interesting. I went up, I treated myself to a private retreat, my friend Hillary Schneider's ranch, Epona Rise. I also wanted to test my wings out a little bit. Like, okay, can I travel? Can I travel? Like, is this a
thing?
How
was it? How was it?
It was great. It was great. So she has a herd of 29. Oof. They live, you know, on 80 acres.
Oh, that's how she can have 29. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You have to have 80 acres if you've got that many. So it was so interesting, though, for a few reasons, because I was asking all these questions about this new business. Like, I was like, okay, like I was there in part because, okay, let's unpack this and see what this wants to be, and what better place to do it than with this herd of horses from all over the place, from so many different scenarios, some from very abusive backgrounds, some from the wild, you know, some in their 30s, all across the board, right? So one that really stuck out for me was a horse that had come from a facility in Vancouver that is, like, when you say it, you just think stall, tiny paddock, sterile ground, no friends, electric fencing, and, you know, out for an hour a day for work and that's it, you know? So that, and like, that's across this area. That's just the thing. So he comes up to the ranch for his retirement, and he'd never really lived, like he'd been a hunter jumper for 17 years, you know, he'd been at work for 17 years. They didn't know if he'd even been with horses previous to that. Well, lo and behold, he went into their elder herd of 7, I think. And he is now the very, very benevolent leader of that herd. He's built his horse language. He's built his social skill set to a point where he is a really beautiful leader of this particular elder herd. And the cool thing about it is, so she, of course, is in communication. This is an owner that is boarding him there. So she's in communication with this owner and telling her, oh my gosh, and sending her video of the integration and all these things. No shit. She had 4 calls from other people at this, in this area, about retiring their horse at the farm. But would that have happened if they hadn't seen it was possible? That's my question mark. And I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think we need to experience and see with our own eyes that something can be possible, and that it can be not only possible, but deeply supportive before we feel confident to make a shift, especially one so big. And so when she told me that, I was like, oh man, okay. Like, so I'm planning, of course,
to
the UK to see the track systems. I'm planning these things, you know, even around the island. I want to go and do facility tours. And I'm going to go see Kathy Sierra, of course, and do, like, the whole Washington thing when we come and see you in May, because and so I want to actually take video and talk to people about what has been their process. You know, what are the elements of this? How has the integration been? You know, these are the things that people get nervous about. And, like, that's something that I'm really stoked to bring, is like, this is totally possible and so supportive of the things that you're wanting to already do with your horses.
And I don't think it's insignificant that what people caught onto was, oh, I want to retire my horse there. The big work with capital letters is to convince those people that they can have a working animal living in a species appropriate environment, that they don't think it's possible. They think, oh, that's what I'll give my horse when they retire. When they're done, when I don't need them, when I won't use them, I'll send them off. And that is another subject about people who are safe people, who understand horses, who have money and don't decide to be safe stewards for their retired horses. I find that
whole other conversation,
which I don't want to piss off too many people by saying something I don't mean right now. But that's a whole other conversation. Maybe we can circle back to that at another date as stewards of older horses. But that's really where the work's going to be done. And I'm hearing you describe that you have the intuitive understanding that all it's going to take is a few role models for the snowball effect to start growing. And it's already beginning, but the early adopters of this, like Beth Ann at a Gawsworth track livery has had the most rough journey to where she is right now. And she's an Amazonian. She's like Xena, the warrior princess of track systems. She's just been like, I don't care. I'm doing this. This is the right thing to happen. And like, she's got the battle scars for it, but it's because of people like her
pushing
this open. Totally. Because it's because of her that I was like, oh, I want to do the same thing. Yeah. Right? Yeah,
totally.
So however I can help you,
thanks,
within my limits, within boundaries, I'm in.
Yeah.
All in, because I would love to return to my primary skill set of just teaching horsemanship and riding with horses who are happy and balanced and healthy, and who the other 23 hours of their day are above board without question. We're not worried about them outside training. I would love to return to my skill set with a horde of horses whom are appropriately kept and housed.
I agree.
I would love to do that. So it's God's work. This is the next big step. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yes.
Alexa, we're going to start to wrap up. I've got a handful of little segments/questions I'm going to take you through to finish.
Okay.
And I mean, we've spoken about it a little bit, but I want you to imagine that in the equestrian industry, there's a steaming pile of something in the corner that needs us to lift it up and muck it out. Something that makes you say, what the muck? What the muck? What is that thing for you?
Oh man, that's a big question. I've got a few. It completely drives me bonkers when people start their horses young, like bonkers. Do not come up to me and brag that your 2-year-old is so, you know,
mature.
Oh my God. No, please just stop.
Stop that. Muck that out.
Oh, muck that out. I did a recent post that has like 200 shares, which is insanity. Chronicling my collapse event, and in with a comparison to what a cruising horse is, which essentially I named two
specific trainers,
and one actually magazine and one trainer. That I saw two very specific but similar things happening and was like, okay, like, what the fuck, guys? Can we move past this? Like, it really got me to a place of, first of all, just rage. Like, I raged.
Rage.
Oh my God. Like,
I love rage. Rage is so helpful.
Yeah, it was like, and then from that rage, I was like, okay, what do we need here? And a part of it was, okay, we need education. Like, a lot of people don't know what they're looking at when they see a picture like that, they go, that's fucked up, but they don't necessarily know why. And so when I saw this post sort of going viral, I'm like, yeah, for a lot of people, this is a really important clicking point to know that when we see a horse in collapse, that is a trauma response. That is a moment for us to say, this isn't okay. And even prior to that, hopefully, it takes a bit to get a horse to that place. So hopefully before that, we can step in and say, this is not okay. So this shift that's needed there for me, I would love to see, you know, one day, hopefully it's a long way down the road when I pass, that this way of training horses is done. Out.
Yes.
We just don't, it's not even a question. It is a criminal act.
Yes.
It's not done, you know?
Yes.
Because
it's just. Because if it was done to a dog, people would be liable for criminal prosecution. And yet for a horse, not only is it accepted, but it is put front and center. It is celebrated. It is laughed at. Yep. It has huge money behind it. I mean, I tried watching episode 2 of Yellowstone on Netflix and had to turn it off because I was I was feeling nauseous. And I thought, how many people had to green light this message?
Yep.
How many thousands of people and how many millions of dollars was poured into putting the plain old systemic abuse of an animal front and center, and the people associated with it, and then glorifying it in this sort of romantic vision of the American West. I thought, no, shame on them. Shame on them. We should all know better. Like, I think we should cancel culture. That's something I want to muck out, because by canceling these people, we become one of them. We have to actually engage them with critical discourse and say, okay, I'm going to need you all to stop and turn on our thinking brains for a little sec and just like, let's just think this one through. Because if you really thought that through a few more extra dot, dot, dots, you'd actually arrive to the conclusion where we need to be.
Yeah. And it was something like, you know, I actually wrote letters to.
Yes. Yes.
Because for me, that was a way of moving and
moving it through.
But also like, hey, let me just be clear about what it is that's happening. Do better, you know, and offering like, hey, if you want some resources on this, please let me know. I mean, you know, it definitely had a bit of a, like a ragey tinge to it, but also
from that
space of like, if you come to me and say, I want some resources around this, I'm there. you know, like, let's change this because it's not, it's abusive, it's shitty, you know? And so those are my two at the minute. I mean, I could go on and on, but
there's so much to muck out. Like, basically the equestrian industry is like a dark stable that no one's mucked out for a while. There's a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. The next question, and I think you've already mentioned it, but maybe a summary. There's a tide of change occurring in the equestrian industry. Mm-hmm. How are you contributing towards that tide of change today?
I'd like to think that I am making some good contributions, you know, with the podcast, with the apprenticeship, just generally trying to be a force for education and change as much as I can be. And also with, I think we don't always give credit to the work that we do on our own, you know, because that's not necessarily the stuff that people are seeing. And I'm not videoing myself with my girls very much. I do for like apprenticeship sometimes, but honestly, I think that personal work is as valuable, you know, that I can step into a space where I'm fully congruent with the message that I'm sharing in those more external ways, right?
And you are all of those things. For anyone who hasn't been lucky enough to actually meet Alexa in the flesh, the way you present yourself on your podcast and how you've spoken with me today, you are exactly that and then more in person. There is a clear, clear blue line through everything that you do that is trustworthy and congruent. And I love that you said, and it's an unexpected answer for me, that the way you contribute to tides of change is, again, that self-discipline, that personal discipline, that bringing it right back to what I'm doing with my horse right now is how I can do my best contribution.
Yeah.
I think that's forgotten sometimes in some folk.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. I mean, that time with the girls, like, I it's gold. So good.
I think Maya Angelou said, she's a huge inspiration for me. She said that take up the battle. This is your life. This is your world, and make the world a better place, but right where you are. You don't have to change the world. Take your world where you are and make it better right where you are.
Yeah.
And if where you are is in front of one horse that, quote, nobody else cares about, then make the world better for that one horse. That's how these things are done.
Yeah, exactly.
And finally, Alexa, take me home. Everyone's on a learning journey. This is the age of learning journeys. Everyone's on a journey. Everything's a journey now.
Apparently.
Right? But what are we coming home to? What's home for you?
That's such a good question.
That sigh, I think you've just given it to us. That feeling. It's a feeling.
I mean, it's like, for me, I've realized home is just this state for me of feeling over myself, of feeling grounded, and it's cliche, like presence, yes, but this sense of like, I'm in my body, I'm here. I'm experiencing the small things, the beautiful things, the hard things, and I'm staying with it, you know? And I just love that. Like, what a beautiful way to be in the world, you know? Mm. Yeah.
Alexa, perfect. It's perfect. Mm. Thank you so much. You're going to be a recurring guest, I hope.
Yay. Absolutely.
We'll do it. We'll do it both ways. It's going to slice both ways. I'm so grateful that you're here, that you're healthy, that you're thriving, and that you're dreaming again. I was so worried when you were unwell. I thought, oh, we can't, not now, at this, at the tide of change, we can't lose a leader like Alexa, you know, because your contribution to what you're putting out there, but also to lose someone like you, it's egregious, in my opinion. But I'm so glad that you're here, and thank you for coming on my pod and for talking with me today. And I'm grateful for you.
It's such an honor. Thank you for having me. So excited for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to stop recording now. You've been listening to the Emotional Horsemanship Podcast. I am your host, Lockie Phillips. Thank you for listening. That was our guest, Alexa Linton, one of my friends, one of my inspirations, and I'm so glad to see her doing so well and look forward to our future collaborating together. Be sure to check out the show notes if you want to learn more about Alexa, and if you want to learn more about emotional horsemanship, please go to emotionalhorsemanship.com, and I'll see you on the next episode.